Deco Retro program here on Planet FM. We will bring you interesting interviews, updates of future deco, modern, retro, and other related events. Also the stories that celebrate New Zealand's history and its people, as well as book reviews and other snippets capturing the glamour and fascination of a bygone era.
Deco Retro, Deco Retro.
Was a ship that put to sea. The name of the ship was a Billy of Tea. The winds blew up her bow, dipped down or below, my Billy boys blow. Soon may the willowman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take her leave and go.
Good afternoon, listeners. This is Nancy on the Deco Retro program. Today we are talking to Frances Walsh. Frances is an Auckland writer, researcher and journalist. She works for the New Zealand Maritime Museum as their in-house writer and is a former staff writer with Metro magazine. Recently, she was involved in writing the book Endless Sea for the Maritime Museum. The Maritime Museum opened on the Auckland waterfront in 1993 and has a sprawling and eclectic collection of Maori and Pacific art. Endless Sea, written by Frances and photographed by Jane Usher, is made up of a series of stories told through the tahunga, or treasured possessions, of the New Zealand Maritime Museum, exploring New Zealand maritime history through 100 fascinating and wide-ranging objects, ranging from shipbuilding tools and Peter Blake's first trophy to menu cards from the glory days of ocean liners and exquisite model ships. It's a perfect book for all who love the sea, boats and ships, and all else that sails on the water. Now today we will chat with Frances on a few of these fascinating stories. Good afternoon, Frances.
Kia ora, Nancy.
Now there are so many interesting stories in your book that it's hard to choose, you know, which one to start with. But I know that you particularly wanted to talk about the Merchant Navy, as I believe they have a special celebration going on this year. And, you know, you feel like you'd like to give them some publicity.
Yes, in the sea there are a number of stories about civilian seafarers. So every year on the 3rd of September, there's a commemoration of the contribution of merchant seafarers in wartime. So mm-hmm. It's called Merchant Navy Day, and it falls on, as I said, the 3rd of September, and it's celebrated all over the world.
Oh, really?
And fabulous. Yeah, and it's very much about recognising seafarers, civilian seafarers' contributions in wartime, because, you know, they as a group of workers, they faced really, you know, very risky circumstances during the war, and they didn't always get acknowledgement for it because they didn't really fit into the Anzac legend of the heroic soldier giving all for king and country. You know, they were sort of looked down on a bit, really, weren't they?
It was such a shame because they did so much work. In particular, I think you've got one chapter in there, and it refers to Captain Arthur H. Davy, who was a fantastic guy. Yes. Can you tell us a bit about him?
Yeah, well, he's sort of in the book for a number of reasons, but principally because he was one of about 1,700 New Zealanders who were awarded the Mercantile Maritime War Medal for voyaging through danger zones in World War One.
Mm-hmm.
And he was skippering a Union Steamship Company vessel called Katoa, and they went through, it was chartered for the British Admiralty, and mm-hmm. it took cargoes, you know, such as West Coast coal, actually, through the Indian Ocean and the Persian Gulf. And, yeah, it's extraordinary. And he was a lucky man. I mean, I think he had a lot of flair and panache, Davy, and a very long career in the Merchant Navy. But you know, 15,000 seafarers died, civilian seafarers died in that conflict in World War One, and, you know, some when they were torpedoed by U-boats.
Yeah, it was terrible. And apparently the Germans had a sort of a seaplane, was it, out called, what was it called, Wolfchen.
Wolfchen, yes.
Yeah, Wolfchen. And it used to sort of sight the boats and then drop some letters down, or, you know, messages down to them and say, you know, stop your engines, we're coming in. And
And then they would get the booty, they would get the cargo and take prisoners of war and then scuttle the vessels.
I know. But they did take the passengers off, didn't they? I mean, they...
Yes, hopefully. They did. And they took... Yeah, they did.
They'd be prisoners of war, I suppose, were they?
Yes, they were. Yeah, but they torpedoed... Well, they torpedoed boats, ships, but they also, took them by heavy persuasion as well. And they were extremely active in both wars.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was quite fearless, wasn't he? I mean, he a very, very brave man, really.
Yes, as were a lot of the seafarers, you know, and they didn't really sign up. Well, they didn't sign up for it either.
Mm.
Yeah.
And apparently, like a lot of the... New Zealand girls looked down on the Merchant Navy and wouldn't go out with them, and, you know, they were given a really hard time.
There was that whole thing about, you know, saber-rattling kind of back at home for the, you know, what essentially was an imperialist bloodbath. But you do come across reports in newspapers at the time, now I'm talking World War One, about... You know, young woman handing out white feathers to merchant seafarers. I mean, this was despite they had been deemed as, working in an essential industry.
I know.
So they were exempt from military service as well.
Yes.
But you forget how jingoistic, you know, people could be at that time, and I guess still are.
No, it's really sad because they did get a hard time and they were in danger, you know, a lot of their life, and a lot of lives actually were lost, weren't they, you know, at sea and whatnot, particularly.
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah, and in World War Two, I mean, 140 merchant seafarers died in World War Two, but an equal number were taken as POWs as well.
Yes, it was pretty tough, that's for sure. Now, in Auckland, there was a place where these sailors could come and be looked after by some kind ladies, and they had dances for them, and it just made life a little bit brighter. Of course, it wouldn't be happening, I suppose, in the war years, but, you know, before that and just after. And I think it was known as the Flying Angel Mission. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, there are a few organisations that work internationally all over the world in ports that look after seafarers, their kind of spiritual, moral and physical well-being, I guess. And the Flying Angel was one such organisation, and it's still in existence today. Now it goes by the name of the Mission to Seafarers. But... And also there's the Stella Maris, which is Star of the Sea. That's a Catholic welfare group, and the British Sailor Society.
This one was more of an Anglican one, wasn't it, I think?
Yes. And now most of them are combined.
The
Centre in Auckland has, you know, the three groups minister to seafarers. But, yes, there was this kind of wonderful group of women who... ran these dances, Tuesday night dances from 8 p.m. And they ran them from definitely after the war, 1947 to about 1981. And I would guess before then.
Mm-hmm.
And the group was called the Harbour Lights Guild. And they had a younger set. And these were unmarried women. And it fell to the unmarried woman to organise the weekly dances.
Okay.
You know, they put on the supper and they chatted to the blokes, and it was all very, Oh, I don't know. It sounds so sort of wonderfully innocent and big-hearted,
yes.
You know.
That's what I thought.
But it also, also sort of indicate we've got in the museum and in the book Endless Sea, we've got two little modest objects that are from this story. And one is a passbook of the Harbour Lights Guild Savings Bank, the Auckland Savings Bank,
and that's
where they put in all the money they raised. And then we've got a membership card from 1953.
Oh, lovely.
Because they did extraordinary things. Aside from running these dances, they also, you know, they fundrose and they did things like they sent books to lighthouse keepers.
Wow.
They would visit sailors in prison and on their ships.
That's great.
You know, offer them a home-cooked meal. But the dances, I think, were quite wonderful. But they do indicate, you know, and signify the different worlds that seafarers live in now, because the reality is with containerization and container ships, by the 1970s, sailors didn't really have time to cut the rug in Auckland or anywhere else, actually, because basically the very quick turnaround of these ships means that seafarers don't have a lot of contact with kind of the communities into which they bring most of the goods that people consume still.
And there's quite a lot of Asian people on them. What I mean is, like, they don't require, or there would be a sort of language difficulty, would there?
I don't think language difficulty is the issue. I mean, it was always so that the international labour force of seafarers was kind of fairly diverse.
Yes.
You know, that was it. The fellowship was offered to all, and it still is, actually.
I'm sure it is.
You know, fishermen to Ukrainian, you know, captains or what have you. Yeah.
Yes. No, these women were fantastic. They'd even, like, invite these people home and, you know, into their family. And it was all so very innocent. You know, it wasn't like they dated them or anything like that. It was just...
Well, I think they actually might have. There might have been a bit of seepage there.
Oh, was there?
Because you talked to...
Okay.
There were a few marriages that...
Oh, really?
You know, where people had met at these dances, which kind of... You know, you can imagine,
nice,
right?
Really?
You know?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yes, relationships could become intimate.
Yes, well, that's life, isn't it? It must have been nice for them to have something like that, because otherwise, you know, they just knew nobody. It was pretty horrible for them. So these...
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, I think that people... Still now, you know, 90% of the world's trade is moves across the sea. And
today
there are 1.5 million seafarers. But, you know, people don't often recognise them as a labour force or as individuals, because they're not citizens in some ways.
Mm.
They're on the sea. COVID, of course, during COVID, it's much worse, because many of these seafarers, men and women now, haven't been able to get off these ships.
No.
They haven't been able to have shore leave, as limited as it is.
Oh, it's been terrible for them, yes.
And they don't have Wi-Fi. And that's one of the fantastic things that the Mission to Seafarers and the International Seafarers Centres in New Zealand are doing, is now that they're taking down portable Wi-Fi to the guys as they come in and out of into, you know, New Zealand ports, such as Littleton or Tauranga or Auckland, so they can actually connect with their whānau.
Oh, that's great that's being done, because otherwise, you know, they're just stuck there until they do, you know, come out of their lockdown. I also think there was football. There's a chapter in there. You're talking about a Mackay football
shield,
challenge shield, which you have in the.
Yes. That was a competition organised again by the Flying Angel, and it was a soccer competition for the crew of the various merchant vessels. Mm-hmm. And they would play in Auckland, at least, in, on the sort of summit or just below the summit of Mount Albert, and the guys would, the mission would take them there, transport them there, and, yeah, it was, I mean, part of what the mission wanted was to keep the guys busy and kind
well, of that's important,
clean,
otherwise.
Decent pursuits, you know.
of course, yes. Otherwise they'd probably just go in the pubs and create trouble,
yes,
and whatnot.
And,
yes.
And you know what, yeah.
And they were young, probably, some of these men too, you know, quite young men.
Yeah, they would have, yes. So it was a kind of displacement activity, I think.
Yes.
But clean fun.
Yeah, no, it sounds really good. Is it called a Mackay or called a Mackay? They are a furniture company or something down the South Island, aren't they?
Yeah, in Christchurch.
But
I think the thing is that people then, you know, I mean, that shield that we have, the competition, I think it represents the competition over the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
People and organisations and businesses were more aware of seafarers and might have had more links, actually, to actual seafarers, you know.
Yeah.
So they were much more kind of present in society. It's interesting, isn't it? And that they would sponsor that cup. But there are other examples of that. Like there was a British Sailor Society had a quarters and an incredibly beautiful chapel on Key Street. Now, that was built
by
Fletcher Construction,
mm-hmm.
gratis. I mean, and it was the money for it was raised by citizens of Auckland.
Gosh, that's great. Is that where that beautiful lead glass window was?
Yes, Milan Mercosic's beautiful, beautiful stained glass windows, all kind of abstracted and dynamic. But, yeah, that was funded basically by Aucklanders and Fletcher Construction.
That's fantastic. Is that still standing or has it been pulled down?
No, really? It was actually demolished in 1993 and then we got the windows so that you can come and see the windows.
Oh, you've got
They're
the windows.
At the museum. So they were rescued.
Oh, the windows look gorgeous. Thank goodness that, well,
yeah.
It would have been terrible if they'd been sort of demolished as well. That's fantastic. Now, I suppose when we think of sailors, we always think of tattoos, particularly in those days. So you've got a chapter devoted to that, which is very interesting.
Yes. We've got in our collection it's a piece of work by an American artist called Lucy Bellwood, and she's a cartoonist and a graphic artist, and she has done this. It's really a graphic called Homeward Bound, The Art of the Sailor, in which she essentially decodes the visual language of tattoos. Yes, it's a diagram, basically, of a bloke, a heavily tattooed bloke, and with all the kind of different meanings of the tattoos. So
yes,
it's just really interesting because you sort of, well, the thing about tattoos is they were, as an art, they were kind of around since Neolithic kind of times, but then they became entwined with nautical culture and merchant and navy seamen actually as well, because they came, the British fleet came across the tattoos early on, and you'll come across stories where privateers, say there was one privateer from Yorkshire who in 1577, his name was Martin Frobisher, he bought a tattooed an Inuit woman back to England after he was up in that neck of the woods, and he sort of paraded her around until she died a month later.
Poor thing. That's terrible.
Yes. Well, I think she was an exhibit rather than an individual.
So she was Polynesian, was she?
She was an Inuit.
Oh, okay.
She would have been from the Arctic Circle.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Gosh. But then once the British in particular, started exploring the Pacific in the 18th century, then tattooing really picked up, and Cook's crew, you know, on their first voyage in 1768, you know, a lot of his crew were tattooed in Tahiti.
Well, yes, because, you know, the Polynesian tattoos, they've always been into tattooing, haven't they, really?
Yeah. Mm. Then as they sort of morphed and became kind of more a hybrid, then you got tattoos that were, you know, some were quite job-specific,
mm-hmm.
like a whaler might have had a harpoon
yes.
somewhere on his body, and then deckhands often had a knot of rope around their wrists.
So yes, that's right.
Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah.
And the one I really like is there were a class of tattoos that were effectively merit badges. So you had things like a swallow or many swallows, and one swallow indicated the sailor had voyaged 5,000 miles.
Oh, okay.
The one that I think is very beautiful is a fully rigged ship, mm-hmm. you know, as in a tall ship on a chest, which meant that the wearer had rounded Cape Horn.
Oh,
a very
okay.
hairy enterprise. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, not the tattoo, I mean the activity of rounding horn.
Yes.
And then other markings were, I guess, kind of summoning otherworldly assistance, because after World War II, or in World War II, a couple of tattoos that became popular were a rooster and a pig, and they were tattooed on either foot.
Yes.
And the kind of genesis or the logic behind it was that when roosters and pigs were transported on ships, they were put in crates.
Yes.
In the event of the ship sinking, the crates floated.
Oh.
And therefore the animals survived. So it was kind of, if you had them on your body, on your feet, it was kind of talismanic almost that
you would float.
You might survive. It was lucky you'd float.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I wonder what happened to all those pigs and whatnot floating around the sea. Did they eventually get washed up on the shore, or probably
they
very hungry by that time?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, look, Frances, we've unfortunately come to the end of our time, but this is a really wonderful book, and I feel it will become a collector's item for people who love and have sailed on the Waitemata and the many other seas of the world. And thank you so much for being with us today. It's so interesting.
Oh, no, my pleasure. And can I just do one plug for the
yes,
New Zealand Maritime
please do,
Union?
Of course.
Because on the 3rd of September, Merchant Navy Day, we have a big celebration down at the museum, and people are very welcome to come. There's a series of talks from the Seafarer Centre. Actually, the Navy is going to give a talk as well. And then we have a bit of a cuppa, and it's also... The event is online as well. So just a warm invitation to anyone who might be interested
that sounds
to come
good.
Along.
Thanks, Frances. That sounds really interesting, and I'm glad that you could announce that.
Yeah, okay. Ngā mihi. Ngā mihi, Nancy. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Frances, for being with us today.
Deco Retro Future Events.
Yes, listeners, some future events are planned by our sponsors, Club Modern. August the 22nd, join members for a late afternoon soiree of jazz at 244 Ponsonby Road. This is your chance to dress up in your deco finery and come along and enjoy this afternoon of jazz. Tickets are limited, so hurry up and contact Kay Coleman. Now, her email address is KAYEC, that's KAYEC, KAYEC, at oriental.com.au. Or you can ring her on 021-424-820 for tickets and information on this event.
This was a ship that put to sea. The name of the ship was a Bully of Tea. The winds blew up her bow, dipped down a below my Billy Boys blow. Soon may the wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. She had not been 2 weeks from shore when down on her a right whale bore. The captain called all hands and swore he'd take that whale in tow. Soon may the wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave and go. Before the boat had hit the water, the whale's tail came up and caught her. Hands to the side, harpened and fought her when she dived down low. Soon may the wellerman come to bring us sugar and tea and rum. One day when the tonguing is done, we'll take our leave.
Songs that come from dead men's tongues anchor me, anchor me. As the compass turns and the glass it falls and the storm clouds roll and the gulls they call, anchor me, anchor me, anchor me. Shivering skin where the green waves crash and the whirlpools spin. Anchor me, anchor me, anchor me.
Program today, listen every second Wednesday of the month at 2:10 p.m. or download us anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/DecoRetro. And we would like to thank our sponsors, Club Moderne, Art Deco Society Auckland. We will keep you informed of all future exciting and glamorous events to be held by Club Moderne. For more information, email judith.moore650@gmail.com. That's judith.moore650@gmail.com. Bye for now.